love it. You are now tuned in to Three Black Men, a podcast by three black men where we talk about theology, culture, and the world around us. The following content may not be suitable if you ain't real enough. Listener discretion is advised, because real recognize real. Here's the hope when we look familiar.
Think can be helpful for people, but it was just very important for me to define who I was as a person for the reader from Jump Street. So whenever you're reading this book, you know the perspective that this book is coming from. And so even like if you go back and like you read the author's note, so it's like, you know, before, so it's like that some of the first things that are written by me, I'm defining myself. So you know exactly, you know that I'm black, that I'm straight, that I'm cisgender, that I'm Christian, that I'm this, that I'm relatively able-bodied, blah, 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 blah. You know all these things about me. So then whenever you read, and maybe there are things that areas where it's like, oh, you know, I wish that she would have gone farther here, or I wish that it would have been that, understanding that like, okay, I'm writing from this very, very specific perspective. And it's not even that, I mean, I'm sure that there are areas, there are things that I could have said and could have done and could have like whatever, could have said more here or done more there or whatever, or spoken up about like, you know, this specific issue over here or whatever. Like that's the problem with writing a book is you are limited to the number of words that you can write. And then once it's written, it's not a dynamic document, right? And I think that, exactly. You know, one day we could have like dynamic books where you're reading and where the material of that book could change, where it can be
come
edited
on, futurism.
And change. I mean, maybe that will become a thing. That'll be very, that raises a lot of other questions, but maybe we'll be able to have that. But once, but you know, those 50 odd thousand words that I wrote, that's what they are, and I was only limited to that, so I could only say so much. So anyway, but defining myself, I think, was very important. And so then in my work as a theologian, those identities that I hold, those are central to my work, like to anything that I say. And it's only white, cisgender, heterosexual Christian men that get the benefit of neutrality. They're the only ones that get the benefit of this is the default position, this is the neutral position, and then everything else besides outside of that perspective isn't. Something that I've shared frequently is about whenever I was in seminary, I made this joke a ton of times, but like the seminary that I went to, they were trying very hard and failing in a lot of respects to be diverse, to be inclusive. And I was an online student. And so everything was structured on different weeks. So you had, you know, week one was this topic, week two was this topic, every single class. So almost always around week five or week seven, it would be what I would call contextual theology week. So it was like all the rest of the course, we've been talking about white men. We have had white men.
I'm
as
so
a thing.
Triggered. Wow.
But it is. I know it's giving me flashbacks. Like, oh my gosh, contextual theology weeks. We didn't go
here
to the same school, but you know what I'm talking about.
Literally,
it's like,
yes.
It's like contextual theology week. So that's the week that we're gonna throw in
James Cone.
That's the week we're going to throw in James Cone. That's the week that we're going to have perspectives from the global majority, because this is no tea, no shade on our friends in the global South, but oftentimes, so you're going to an American seminary, oftentimes their diversity would include perspectives from the global South, which is wonderful. But then it would erase the experience of like Black American and Latino American, our Latine siblings, our Indigenous siblings, our Asian American siblings. And so we're like, it's wonderful to hear from African theologians and scholars. It's great to hear to look at different Asian theologies. Like, this is wonderful. I'm not complaining about that. We definitely need that. But then it was almost like, there are times whenever it was just like, okay, great, we're talking about these global perspectives and we're talking about white Euro-American perspectives, but I am not African in the sense of being a continental African. I am African in the sense that I am part of the African diaspora. And so my experiences, my lived experience, my stories, the way that I view God is going to be informed by that history of enslavement, by that history of my ancestors being kidnapped from the continent and all these other types of things. And so it rarely hit the spot. So sometimes, yeah, there'd be people that who would have Black American theologians and stuff, and they would try to address some of those gaps. But at the end of the day, it's like, we're not talking about these theologians throughout the class. They're not even necessarily required knowledge or required anything. This is treated like, it's treated like a cherry on top or like whipped cream or just something that's extra that you don't need. It's not treated as the main course. And so, but my identity is the main course. It's the only identity that I have. And so if I sublimate that identity to then center whiteness, to then center white male perspectives, like that's not authentic. And a lot of people do that. A lot of Black folks do that. A lot of Black theologians do that, and they place themselves in conversation and place themselves in the center. They place white theologians, white theology, all this other type of stuff at the center, and use that kind of as the end all be all, or use that as their frame of reference. But for myself, it's like, you know, I am Black. There's nothing that can change that. Mm-hmm. I'm a cisgender woman. That's how I experience my gender. There's not anything that can change that. You know, I'm hetero. There's not anything that can change that. That's who I am. And so that's the perspective that I'm always going to bring to everything that I do. And if I'm not bringing that perspective, then I'm not really being authentically myself. I'm being something else. I'm being somebody. Mm-hmm. I'm being something that is a copy of someone else. So anyway, so all that to say that is just, I think that act of self-definition was very important to this book, but then also that comes into my work, because that's just, I'm always going to be looking at the perspective of how does this affect Black people, because I am Black. I'm going to be looking at how does this affect me? How does this benefit or harm me? How does this benefit or harm or whatever people who are like me? And that's just how I'm going to approach things.
Yeah, and I think you being that clear allows for a different perspective on white supremacy, because you talk about white supremacy and how it has impacted you and other Black folks so much throughout the book, and you have all these stories that kind of align with, okay, here's how you can see white supremacy show up in this place, and here's another example, and here's another example, because often people, even at this late hour, people still act like, I don't know what white supremacy means. Like, can I get an example? Goodness. So you give a lot of examples, like it could look like this, this, or this. But one thing that I haven't been able to talk to many people about, you kind of talk about it towards the beginning of your book, you talk about the ways that Black folks can participate in white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And how, and I think we don't have enough conversations about that, because the whole deconstruction movement, the ex-evangelical movement, people were fleeing white spaces, Black people, mm-hmm. people of color, and then thinking, oh, we're just going to automatically go to Black spaces and we're going to be free from oppression and white supremacy. So you kind of say like, no, it can pop up here too. So just give us a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, you go in depth in the book, but like, yeah, we need to hear Black folks talking about, we can perpetuate this thing too.
Yeah, you know, it was very important to me. And some people, you know, might criticize or critique me for this, but it was very important for me to include that, yes, we also have internalized white supremacy. White supremacy shows up in our own communities in these various ways. It was important for me to name that for some of the reasons that you stated, that I think that a lot of us who grew up in integration or who spent significant amounts of time in integrated spaces, because that's what it is that it's not just Black space versus white space. It's really it's an issue. It is an effect of integration, is that those of us who came up in places that weren't heavily segregated, in spaces that were integrated, we have a different interaction with whiteness than people who still, even though we're quote unquote free, they spent most of their time in predominantly Black spaces. And so this is a divergence, but it's to the point here that I live in Chicago now. I've lived in Chicago for 3.5 years now. And I live on the South Side. I mentioned I attend a Black church. Like, I rarely interact with white people anymore. And I generally am happy about that. But the real is that Chicago is heavily segregated. Like, I live like in the heavily. City of Chicago. Chicago is heavily segregated by design. And so some conversations that I have had once again with dear people, you know, in my church, a lot of them are lifelong Southsiders. They've been born and raised in Chicago, lifelong Southsiders. And so there was a point when I was doing some things for my ordination process. And so I got to meet with a group of people from my church, and most of them, with the exception, I think, of one person, most of them were in like their near 60, like, or 60s, 70s and 80s. And so some of the things that I was talking about with my life experience, they didn't understand, because they understand racism. They understand all that. But they didn't understand some of like the psychology of whenever like you are a Black person and you have your Black culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but you also have white culture, you have whiteness, you have all these things that are sometimes are competing forces, or sometimes forces that influence you in ways that would be different if you grew up in a different space. And then it also oppresses you. And so it oppresses you in a different way, because you are constantly around people who are oppressors, as opposed to where, like, you know, here in Chicago, it's like as a Southsider, all of the racism that I experience usually is of a systemic nature, of a systemic environmental nature, right? So like the day-to-day things, I can look out my window and be like, this is racism, but I'm not experiencing a whole. Sorry, I can't know if you can hear it, but my Alexa device is talking to me.
It's okay.
I forgot to mute Alexa, so she was alerting
me.
She was alerting me about a calendar item. So anyway, so you know, I can look outside of my window and see some of the things that are happening where I grew up. It was you're feeling it. It's a systemic thing, but it's also very much an interpersonal thing. And so all of that then to say that oftentimes we don't realize as a people, we think that just because Black people are together, that whiteness isn't going to show up, that white supremacy isn't going to show up, that all these things aren't going to show up. And I think that for those of us who came up in integration, who then were radicalized by some of these events, like Barack Obama being elected president, Trayvon Martin being murdered, Mike Brown being killed, some even, you know, coming in at George Floyd or whatever, but all of us had these Black millennials kind of had these different kind of flashbulb moments.
We appreciate you rocking with us for another episode of Three Black Men. Here's the part of the show where we ask a favor from you. Now, earlier I mentioned a couple of ways that you can support us by joining our community over at patreon.com/threeblackmen. We have multi-tiered support options, and you can get bonus content. If you don't want to do that, you can submit a one-time contribution by finding us on PayPal at 3blackmenpodcast@gmail.com. But we ain't here to tap your pockets. Here's a few ways that you can help us out without spending a single dime. You can stop what you're doing right here, right now, and make sure that you've left us a review and a rating. Don't just give us the 5 stars. Go ahead and write out how much you love this show and tell everybody about it. Do it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you at. Make sure you leave that rating and a review, and that's going to help even more people join the fun over here. Thank you so much. I knew God loved you for some reason.